Accession number 18265, Reel 7.
Dave Brooks, Reel 7.
They took them out of the hovel they were living in, put them in a German barracks down the road a bit further, which was far more comfortable, and they made, instead of making the Germans, they got prisoners, they made them look after. They were prisoners only in respect of they took all the badges of rank off them and put a band round their arm and made them work, practical, not... they told us that we could move out of the prison camp, but don't on any account burn it down because they would need it. We could move into this German barracks down the road, which most of us did. They didn't make any attempt to repatriate us. A RAF officer turned up, a flyer, turned up on the first day. There must have been an aerodrome close by. He turned up and made arrangements that the remainder of these 200 seriously sick British prisoners would be moved immediately. I don't know where to, but they were moved immediately by the Russians. But they made it quite clear to us that we could look after ourselves. They wouldn't particularly interfere with us. And as far as our own nationals went, they didn't repatriate them. And there was probably thousands of them in the camp. All they did was induct them into units similar to what they'd served in before they were taken prisoner. And one Russian that we did make friends with, who very few of them spoke English, but a chap called Boris did, had good English. He claimed he was a professional footballer before he went in the army. And I was out on the prowl with a mate in a village near the camp one day. I saw Boris on a motorcycle. Boris stopped and I said, what are you doing, Boris? He said, me? I'm commissar of area. I said, you're joking. No, I'm commissar of this village. Aren't you going to be sent back home? No, Russia don't do that. And that's a fact. They didn't do that. They just inducted them into units that were peculiar to their that they'd served in probably before. Well, the camp turned itself into an abattoir quite quickly. The Serbs, again, were brilliant at that. They could kill animals and skin them and gut them as soon as look at them. Easy they could. So we started to feed ourselves up a bit. But after a couple of weeks, we said, well, we'll have to make provisions to get ourselves out of here. Well, I'd always mucked in with 8 other people in the prison camp. So we started to make inquiries. We found that the nearest Allied troops were Americans at Schwerin, a town called Schwerin, which I think is on the Elbe. We knew that if we wanted to leave the area, you had to have a pass by the Russians. Oh, Schwerin, I think, was 70, 80 kilometres from New Brandenburg. We thought, well, that's not too bad. If we start off one morning, have a night out, we'll get to Schwerin the next day. So we collected up things we need, food, etc. And off we set. And as I said, we walked all one day, rested up overnight, and walked the next day. And we got to Schwerin near dusk. Already there was a, the Iron Curtain was down, because you come to a Russian on the road, a Russian barrier, and you go through it. Half a mile further on was a American barrier. There was a half mile no man's land, but the Americans had taken over the opera, the local opera house, to put these prisoner wars in. Well, like Aladdin's cave. Yeah, I said before, the American logistics are, it's over the top. If you wanted, the foyer of this opera house was like Aladdin's cave. Everything you need. If you wanted a pack of cigarettes, don't take the packet, bud. Take the pack, which is, I don't know, 20-odd packs, I suppose. Hershey bars, chocolate, food, toiletries, clothes, blankets. Completely over the top, the Yanks can go. And they said, we'll move you... there was other people besides us funneling in to Schwerin. We'll move you the next day, which they did. They put us on their troop carriers and drove us to Lüneburg, where the welcome was just as British there, just as good, but... cigarettes, one packet, a razor blade, a bar of soap, but nevertheless, clothing if you needed it. You know, it wasn't ad lib. But nevertheless, we were made very welcome. They took us to the aerodrome that was there. We had to wait there for a... maybe a day. Because units of the 6th Airborne Division were returning home after coming out of Denmark, where they'd been to accept the surrender of the Germans. They'd been withdrawn and were going back to UK. They had priority with the aircraft. But we weren't there very long at all. And come home by Dakota, they were a co-pilot short. So the captain came back and said, pick me out, and said, you're due. He said, come and sit up the front with me to balance the plane. Keep the plane on an even keel. And I said, yeah, great. First time I'd ever been up in the cockpit of any aircraft. And he said, look down there, and there was a square telescope which you could look through and get a much better view of the ground. And off we went, Germany, I thought, my God, if you come to a wood, it was matchwood sticking up. I didn't see a bridge standing over any river. Desolation all round. I think we flew over Dunkirk. That was still flooded, or largely flooded, the dock area. Flew over Folkestone. Flew up through Kent, right over my home village of Walterinbury, up to Croydon, crossed over Croydon, and landed at Dunsfold in Surrey, where in later years they tested the jump jet. There we were welcomed by WAFs, escorted you off the plane, taken to a shed, and they put hoses up your trouser legs and what's that, but pumped the DDT onto you to delouse you. Then from there, took us to a hangar where it was a very, very good repast laid out. And we had a good meal. Taken to, from there to Hayward's Heath, to a hutted camp, where there was, seemed to be, there was army personnel, but there was a lot of voluntary women helpers, WVS and that sort of thing, who took your uniform away. You had new uniform. They quickly sewed badges of rank, etc. On your bed was, I think, just a fiver, money, and a telegram form, and a leave pass for you to fill in. And the next day we were sent home, with which was the old Whitsunday. Old Whitsunday. We don't. It's that used to come end of end. It was end of May. Quite late in May. That's about it.
How do you feel? Did you have any long-term effects from your experience?
Well, I think I was a bit erratic. I did have nightmares, and for a while, I think. No, the initially we were given 6 weeks leave. You have to remember that the well, let's get it in some sort of sequence. It's all very well being a frontline soldier, but the first time you're fired at, and you know they're firing at you, you say to yourself, blow this for a game of soldiers. From then on, it becomes a test of discipline, which the army have put in you, and self-discipline, pride, which you've got in you. I.e., you don't want to let yourself down or your comrades down. But it isn't as though you like it. Thinking about war is one thing. Being involved in it, being actually shot at, is another thing. I think most people think that way. I think the blokes in the paras used to think, well, there was three things that could happen to you. You could get wounded, you could get killed, or you could get away with it scot-free. You didn't really think about being a prisoner. Not really. That didn't come into it. But so you tend to play the rule of averages, if you like. Well, I got wounded last time. She'll be all right this time. That sort of thing, you know. I don't think it's not a thing that people like. And when I got home, I was given 6 weeks leave, which did get extended by a further 6 weeks. Don't forget the Japanese war was still on. To be honest, when that I just returned to the army when the atom bomb went down. I was returned to a Sedgefield race course where we were going to be sorted out, looked at medically. Terrible thing, the atom bomb, terrible thing. But I was glad. I thought, thank God I'm not going out there. I didn't want to go. I didn't think of the dreadful loss of life that helped a little bit by I've been writing recently to try to put my weight behind these ex-Japanese prisoners. How are they not compensated more than they were, I don't know. So I've never really liked Japanese, but you can't go on all your life disliking people. You can't. And I look back in retrospect and I think most of those troops at Arnhem, German troops, were honourable. They weren't. Most of them were. It was the hardcore in Germany that were bad.
How do you feel now about having served in the Second World War?
How do I feel? Whew, dear. I don't know. Well, too much loss of life. Too much. Too many good friends died. And when you think of, it's 50 odd year ago that they died. Didn't have much of a life, did they? But whether it should have started or not, I'm sure it should have done. Should have started earlier, or should have been, they should have been stamped on earlier. I do believe that that we had the opportunities to stop it, to prevent it, but it was pacifism and appeasement going on in the 30s, which of all parties, they weren't all Tories, they weren't all Labour, but there was terrible lot of pacifists about, you know. Well, that's not a bad thing in itself, as long as the other side thinks that way as well. Because when you think of eventually what the Germans did do, God knows how many Russian lives went. But they set out to try to destroy a race, didn't they?
Yes. But you wanted to put something on about Italy that you felt you'd missed out.
Well, yeah, there was a operation mounted there from, I think, Bari, the town on the Adriatic coast. They used Albemarle aeroplanes, ten in each plane, under the command of Captain Timothy. They were to be dropped well behind the German lines to try to gather up release prisoners of war to get them to a point on the coast where the Royal Navy would pick them up. I think they were only partially successful. There was some success with it. Timothy and his batman and a Sergeant Wright of the 2nd Battalion did get back. I think all the rest were, of the 10 that went from Tupara, of the other 7, 6 were taken prisoner. But Fred Martin, a particular pal of mine, lost his life I'd really like to know how, when, where, because his name is recorded on the casino monument, and it's dated January, some date in January 1944. By that time, the battalion was back in England. It arrived back in England, so he was killed after we, or lost his life. I don't know how, but he was a good lad. He was a real good lad, he was.
Just coming back to Arnhem, how long were you in Arnhem before, between landing and being captured?
3 days. 3 days.